I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 446. I'm going to spoil it,
but it's going to make you want to watch it.
Gadget and Anime Podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast. Panda!
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Hanging.
Yeah, you are hanging in there.
Hangovering is more like it.
You see the reference that I made there? It was an inside joke, but then we made it known to the people, so then it wasn't an inside joke anymore.
Nope. So, yep, I'm recovering from some serious partying where I thought I was 22, but in actuality, my body was like, what are you doing?
As it turns out, Pandalicious's body would like to remind her that she is not, in fact, in her 20s.
Anymore.
This message brought to you by alcohol. That's alcohol. Only for you if you're 21, but don't drink it like you're 21 if you're not.
Yes.
Alcohol.
Because it will make your head hurt.
It'll hurt you. It really will. I am, however, perfectly fine.
Good.
And as such, am enjoying one of my summer favorites, summer shandies. They're one of my favorite things to drink in the summer because I do enjoy beer. I'm also over the age of 21. However, I can drink like I'm 25. No problem.
Well,
because
yeah.
I'm on that pro bro. Level status. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not.
Not everybody can be like me.
Nope.
Also, they should not be like me. People should not drink like I drink because it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. But you know what is fun for all?
Our show?
Yes, and entertainment types things, which we are going to be talking about in bunches today on the show. We've got some game stuff, we got some anime stuff, we've got some animated stuff, so it's not actually anime, because I mostly have been watching various TV shows this week when I've had time to not be doing things that are not my day job, which are few and far between, by the way, these days, but I have been able to do a little bit of watching of stuffs, so I'm catching up on my anime as well as some other highly rated entertaining shows in the nerd community. Probably where I want to start is some of the anime stuff that I've been watching. I've talked about a couple of the new series that I've been watching for the summer, and we've already mentioned that the summer season has been pretty strong. I'm actually going to talk about something that I've been watching over on Funimation and not watching on Crunchyroll, because typically when I watch anime, it's on Crunchyroll. But there are some series that debut first on Funimation, and then subsequently...
I think it's because they must have some type of exclusivity, right?
Well, they probably have the distribution deal initially. And so they show up basically in places where Funimation makes money for them being there. One of those being their own media streaming piece, the other one being Hulu Plus. So that's why a lot of times if there's something that's on Funimation and not on Crunchyroll, you'll also be able to find it on Hulu. But
like
I've been
Death Parade was one of those because Death Parade wasn't on Crunchyroll at all, and I had to watch it on Hulu Plus.
Correct. So I've been watching a series called Overlord, and it's one of those series. First of all, it's based off of a light novel, so right there, I was kind of like, this could be very interesting to me, because anime series based off of light novels usually go one of two ways, and they're either very, very graphic in depiction of violence and a deep story, because light novels tend to like to create deep conflict sometimes that makes people question what they're reading, or they go the super perv direction, and it's graphic depiction of sex. So either way you go with series that are based, and I'm just saying, as a generalization, this is not all animes based off of light novels. Typically, the series that I've seen based off of light novels tend to end up in one of those two camps. I tend to enjoy both of those camps. So I'm usually pretty on board with a series that is based off of a light novel.
But I mean, it wasn't
Sword Art Online.
Yeah, it was based off of light novels that you, like, read through in a tizzy.
Yes, I did. I went through all of the light novels before Gunslinger was turned into an animation, which I enjoyed. I still have them all, actually, in digital format, as well as some in actual print format to read through. Just in case you want to, Panda, because they're kind of enjoyable, I can make you the hookup. But Overlord is a series very much in line with a bunch of series that have come out recently that I enjoyed. Panda mentioned Sword Art as well as Log Horizon, which Overlord is very similar in its foundation to both of those series. So if you haven't watched Sword Art Online or Log Horizon, they are both about real people playing a game that is a fully immersive game. Typically, they're RPG-style games that people have logged into and are playing wholeheartedly. And in the case of both Log Horizon and Sword Art, the people playing the game got trapped inside the game. Sword Art, it was very much about the people in the game knew they were in the game, were constantly trying to find a way out of the game while still dealing with the fact that they were in the game and still people. So they were still trying to do things like forge relationships and create family units and do those things that as a person kind of keep you grounded in reality and keep you sane.
Finding ways to cope while trying to figure out how to get out of this sticky situation.
Correct. And then there were some people who completely gave up on that and were just like, nope, we're just gonna be in this game until we die. And so that happened as well, and you had a big rise of player killers and things like that. But eventually,
now, in Log Horizon, if you were killed in the game, were you killed in real life?
Can I finish what I was going to say about Sword Art before I got to Log Horizon? Because that's where they differ. So in Sword Art, the way that the arc moved was that people eventually did make it out of the game and make it back to their realities. And you had a balance of people who, once they were able to return to reality, some ended up going back and playing games, different games, obviously, on different servers, but a lot of the relationships that they built up in the game were relationships that they continued in real life. As far as Log Horizon goes in the animation, because the animation is all I've seen of Log Horizon, no one has made it out of the game yet, so everyone is still stuck in the game world. When it comes to Log Horizon, when you die in the game, you don't actually die. You are returned. The difference being, in Log Horizon, the price of your being able to return to the game after you die in it is that you actually lose some of your real life reality memories. Mm-hmm. And only a couple of people have figured this out. So the majority of people don't realize that if they die, whether they're killed by another player or killed by what they call people of the land, which are NPCs, which have become aware of all of the adventurers and things like that. So they're not oblivious to what's going on in the world. You do lose memories of your real life and that reality that a lot of people are trying to get back to, which is how a chunk of people have lost hope. There are whole guilds that basically just go into ridiculous raids to try and die because there is a moment where you have a state of epiphany where you are on some planet. Some of the characters that have gone there believe it to be the moon because you are seeing another world that looks like Earth from it if you are paying attention. And there's a moment where you're at basically a sea of tranquility and you can have an epiphany And then there is a moment where there is a memory that you experience, and then it floats off in a bubble and goes away.
And you lose it.
And you lose it. And then it's at that point that you take a step forward towards the sea, and you're brought back and revived in one of the revival cathedrals back in the map. So they're very different stories, and they're very different journeys for the characters that are in the story as well as the person watching them, because you do get to that point, like I said, in Sword Art, where you are back in the reality. And with Log Horizon, that hasn't happened yet. And the things that happen in game are very much more augmented in Log Horizon than they are in Sword Art. So everyone in Sword Art had skills that they could build up for any of the classes that they had. Could craft weapons and things like that. You can do that in Log Horizon as well. But in Log Horizon, it kind of breached what the game could do, because the main character, as it turns out, was able to kind of, because he was such a high scribe, do some things that he should not be able to do. One of the things, I'm spoiling it a little bit, but if you haven't watched Log Horizon, trust me, after I say this, this will be one of the reasons why you want to. There is a party that's made up of some of the younger players in the game. Okay. And so they're basically like middle school age kids that make up this party, who are trying to get their levels up and admire all of the elders that are in the guild Log Horizon. And they go off, and one of the adventurers is named Rudy, who is very flashy, would definitely be a prince type, you know, gorgeous hair, all those kinds of things. They have a lyric music healer and a guard and another scribe. And so they're off doing their adventures to level up and things like that. The healer has realized that Rudy is, in fact, not an adventurer. And that's what the game calls all of the people who are stuck playing the game versus the NPCs. She's the only one that is realized in their party that Rudy is not an adventurer, meaning he's an NPC. He's not a person. And a battle pops up where they are trying to protect a bunch of people of the land as well as adventurers in this one town, and the kids are the first ones to get there. And so they go balls to the walls trying to protect this land, and Rudy is basically damaged to the point where he is going to die. None of the healing things that adventurers have work on people of the land. And so the healer girl, who kind of has a thing for Rudy, knows that he's about to die, and for real. And the main scribe is the only one who's there with her at the time. And so he gets ready to help, and she's like, you can't help him. And he's like, no, I can't. She's like, no, you can't. And so he looks at his stats and then realizes that he's not an adventurer. And he's like, do you want to be one, though? And he's like, all I want is to be an adventurer, to explore the land and to do more than what I was basically programmed to do. So, scribe does a whole bunch of scribing and magic stuff that he's not supposed to do. There's ominous music. He's basically able to write a spell that turns Rudy into an adventurer and tells Rudy and the healer that they can tell no one else about what he did. Because if anybody finds out that he has this ability, every person of the land on the planet is going to want to be transformed. There are going to be a lot of people that are going to want to try and learn this skill or kill him because they think that he's too powerful. Because basically, he has now granted this person...
He's given this entity...
life.
Sentience and life.
Okay.
He is God.
Basically. And so, of course, your brain starts wandering and going, okay, well, what happens when people do figure out a way to log out of the game? They go back to their bodies. Rudy doesn't have a body in the real world because he's an NPC. So what happens to him?
What happens now?
But hopefully we'll find that out in another season of Log Horizon that pops up. So like I said, I've been watching a series that is very much in line with both of those guys. It is set up foundationally the same way. It is about a guy who is playing an online game. The game is called Yggdrasil. So many things based off of
Norse mythology.
Norse mythology, like, which I'm okay with. And so Yggdrasil is getting ready to be pulled offline. And the guy that's playing the game is a big fan of the creator of the Yggdrasil game. And so knowing that it's getting ready to be pulled offline, decides that he's going to bounce back into the game. And, you know, just as it's being taken offline, just kind of experience it one more time before it's gone. Well, he accidentally stays logged in after the game is pulled offline, but he's not booted out. And so he's kind of surprised by it.
As any person would be.
Yep. Yep. Just, you know, like a little bit. Like a little bit. So, the guy's name is, I'm gonna mess this up, Momonoga. He basically is, like, waiting to get booted, and he doesn't get booted. And the character that he plays is a super, super, super high-level magic caster. And the way that his character is drawn, you think that it's a very evil character, because he's a skeleton with very, very broad shoulders and, like, spikes. And so he's basically drawn like the devil in a deep, deep dungeon, basically. And so he's just kind of sitting back and trying to figure out why he's still in this dungeon, and brings out the logout screen, and the logout option isn't there. And so you basically hear, like, this young man's voice inside this very scary, off-putting looking skeleton demon thing. So there's a lot of comedy that's created because of that. But he's sitting in his throne room, basically, trying to figure out, so why can't I get out of the game? And, this is a little weird that I'm, you know, still here. And is starts looking at, trying to look at his friends list to see if there are any friends listed. There aren't. But the main henchman for his character shows up, Albedo, who is a female demon of some kind, who is ridiculously head over heels in lust and love with Momonoga's character, which is named Ein's Al Gaun. So he basically was like, well, hey, the NPCs here, Momonoga, is like, they're not really behaving like normal, and I'm stuck in here, so let me see what I can do, and let me see what they do, and if they react, or if they stay on script, and things like that. So he summons Albedo, and this is all in episode one, so I'm not giving anything away. He summons Albedo to come closer to him, and she's like, of course, anything you say, Lord Momonoga, like, of course. And he's like, I want to touch your bosom. And she's like, oh, well, I need, like, a few minutes to get clean or whatever, but, you know, if you want to take me like this, that's fine. It's completely fine. Go ahead. Go ahead. So he's like, I've never touched boobs before. So he's just, like, with his skeleton hands, with all of his rings on, just, like, squeezing boobs. And was like, oh, wow, she's not freaking out. And he's having this entire thought process the entire time that he's having the process. He's squeezing her boobs. And she's just having all sorts of feelings and getting flushed in the face while he's having these thoughts. And then he realizes, oh, man, I should totally stop fondling her boobs. And she's like, okay, I am so ready. Just take me now. And she's getting ready to, like, strip her clothes off. And he's like, no, we're not going to do that now. And she's like, oh, did I just please? She's like, no, it's not that. It's not that. The situation just has to be right. And, but thank you for everything. And she's like, of course, anytime. You can have me anytime. Just let me know and I'll prepare. So that sets it up. A bunch of things. But basically, Ainz has domination over several lords of the rings, the levels, of his castle. And has accepted the fact that he's going to be stuck in this game. And so is trying to figure out, well, since I'm going to be in this game, what should I do? What should I basically make of my life in this game? And so Overlord is his journey to kind of figure out, well, what do I do? Do I stay evil or do I become a defender of the people? I have no idea how strong my power is because it's been a long time since I've been in this game and I don't know what NPCs are like. So he journeys forth to check out some things that are going on in other towns. He consults with a couple of his other floor lords and realizes that, hey, one option, which might be a little bit fun, is there are basically four major factions that have carved up the land around where his castle is. And he could basically just go on a campaign to take it all back. So he's kind of playing around with that idea. And one of his vassals, I'll call them, overhears that one little wry thought and goes back and shares it with all the other vassals. And they're like, well, then that's awesome. because we will absolutely do whatever we need to, including give our lives to make that happen. Because if it will bring Lord Ainz joy, then that's what we do, for everything is for him. And you're like, oh, that's so cute how devoted they are, even outside of like their programming, because everybody's off script now. So they really, really, really just love their Lord. And there are a couple of the vassals who are women who are vying for the Lord's attention because they want to bear his heir. So you've got those cat fights that happen, which is kind of funny, because one is a dark lowly type who Albedo makes sure to point out has but not any kind of sort of chest, and so therefore can't be taken seriously as a possible mate. Maybe like a second wife or a concubine, but definitely not a first wife, which pisses her off a little bit.
Who likes being told they're second best?
Yeah, you know, or concubine material. Not a lot of chicks want to hear that. So there's a lot of lofty fun in between the main pieces of the series, which are battles. Because again, the anime is based off of the foundation of this guy being stuck in an RPG. So one of the later episodes that I've watched, and currently we're only up to episode 4 in the arc, but one of the later episodes that I watched in the series had Ainz basically go to a nearby village that had been under attack that he was able to see using his magic. And so he summoned Albedo and said, hey, get in your fighting gear. I want to kind of check out what's going on in this town. Most of his vassals see humans as lowly life forms, not even worthy of being pets. But Ainz has pretty much put into his head that, hey, if I'm actually going to become conqueror of this land, which I think is kind of where I'm leading towards as far as a mission and something to do and give me focus and be challenging since I'm going to be stuck in this game, I need to do it in a way that the only people that fear me are the people that are the people that I'm going to fight. I don't want the people of the land to fear me. I want them to praise me because I want them to support our troops when we come through and all that kind of stuff. So he's put together, he's a pretty good tactician, Momonoga, that he's got to be very careful of who he makes friends of and who he makes enemies of. And he needs to kind of dipstick the level of power that his perceived enemies have so that he knows how many people he's going to need to take with him whenever he goes to fight, or who he can send out to fight in his stead that won't need the extra power. So he meets up with a platoon of soldiers who have basically decided that a lot of the vassals of the land and a lot of the hierarchy in their own homeland are corrupt because they're not focused on protecting the people. So they've basically gone rogue and have decided that they're just going to dedicate themselves until the last man as they travel to protect any weaklings, villagers, and things like that they come across who are being attacked by, doesn't matter whose people, but other soldiers and magic casters. And so they're getting close to being wiped out when he happens upon the town that Ainz is in. And so Ainz and he have this great meeting, and he realizes, hey, you're pretty much on the same thought pattern as I am about protecting those that are weaker than us, so I'm going to continue to protect this village because it's close to my place. And so the soldier's like, awesome, I'm going to go after these magic casters, and we'll give you a little bit of space so you guys can escape, and thank you so much for doing that. And Ainz has pretty much decided he's actually not going to let the guy die. So just as the battle seems like he's about to die, Ainz switches places with him because he gave him a totem. So he and Albedo show up in their armor and are talking shit to this magic caster who's like, I can control angels, so I'm gonna like destroy you guys right now, and has like 6 or 7 angels attack Ainz, at which point he just kind of laughs and goes, oh my god, first of all, these are all spells from Yggdrasil, so who taught you these spells? Second of all, they're all so low level, I didn't even need to be here. He's like, Dante's like, it's my day off, I shouldn't even be here. So the guy that they're fighting, who's a twisted son of a bitch, just decides, okay, well then I'm going to summon the highest form angel that I have, and that's going to completely wipe you out. Most humans can't even, like, stare at its presence. You're so fucked. So summons this massive angel, which basically looks like a Final Fantasy summon. That's how pretty it was.
Okay.
And you're just like, all right, Ainz, you might actually get hurt this go round. And the angel does its like ridiculous attack, and Albedo starts having a panic attack, And Ainz starts laughing after the dust settles because this guy thinks that he's wiped him out with his angel attack. And Ainz is like, oh my gosh, so that's what, like, taking a little bit of damage feels like. Kind of excited me. Okay, but now it's my turn. And the guy had said some line, I can't remember what it is, but it was really deep about, basically, I'm despair because I'm about to wipe you off the fucking planet. And the entire army is, like, begging for their lives from Ainz and, like, promising him money and, or we'll just follow you into battle. There's no reason to kill us. And he's like, no, no, I'm going to spit this line back to you now. And he takes off his mask because when he's out among human people, he wears a mask over his skeleton to not scare them. But he takes it off with his skeleton hand as he says the line and then proceeds to literally obliterate them from the map. They turn to dust one shot. Okay, he gets rid of the angel by basically opening up a black hole and it sucks the angel into it. And so in one spell, boom, the highest angel gone. Then he wipes everybody out. So there's a lot going on in Overlord and it's on multiple levels. There's a good mix of serious, deep politicking between different areas and regions and somebody stepping up into that fray to kind of be the voice of reason. Then there is just the super, super silly sexual tension stuff. And then there are just the lighthearted comedy moments. So it's a really good balance, very much like Sword Art, very much like Log Horizon. So if you're interested in those kinds of series, I highly, highly recommend it. You know, it doesn't take itself too serious at any point, but at the points that it's trying to be serious, it doesn't make light of those moments either. So I really, really, really enjoy Overlord. And like I said, you can catch it on Funimation, and I'm pretty sure you'll find it also on Hulu Plus.
That sounds like something I would actually really enjoy watching. So I'm going to have to go and...
You need to check those out, because you definitely would enjoy it. And then the other thing that I jumped on, and I know that I'm late to this party, but hey.
Better late than never.
I just started watching Steven Universe, which is on Cartoon Network.
Okay.
And it's not anime as much as it is an animated series. And it's ridiculously popular. I've seen all different kinds of panels that people have been writing. A lot of people who are into anime are into Steven Universe, which, let's face it, there's a lot of really good not-for-kids cartoons that are on Cartoon Network. Rick and Morty. But I've been kind of staying away from this one for a while. But it just started eating up my social feed so much with various comics of people taking some things to a very deep and real place that I thought, hey, maybe I ought to check this out to find out what it's about. So I'm about 9 episodes in on Steven Universe. I've been watching the first season on Hulu right now to get caught up because I don't have cable. So unless it's on the Hulu or on streaming services, I don't see it. And I have to say, it's like, I'm surprised. It's really very good. It's that surprising that, like, first Avatar was. We're like, all right.
Oh, Airbender Avatar?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Where you're just like, all right, so you guys are going to attempt to do a deep animation series and you're going to fuck it up. And then you get a couple episodes in, you're like, this is good. So are you familiar with Steven Universe?
No, I'm not. I haven't watched a single one yet.
All right, so the basics of Steven Universe are that Steven's mom, Rose, was a magical person. And she and the gems, which each of the characters are named after a gem, battled various evil things that intended to do harm to the world. Steven's mom met Steven's dad and fell in love and made Steven. And the cost of bringing Steven into the world is that Rose disappeared. So Steven has basically taken Rose's place among the gems. But Steven can't control his gem, and so he doesn't know how to enact his power yet. By the way, Steven is, like, a very young kid.
Is he, like...
middle school age kid.
He's, like, 12.
And he's super, super happy and super involved in life, super ADD. He's just that goofball inside all of us when we were 11. That's where Steven's at right now. Like, his favorite treat in the world went out of production, and so he had to draw upon his ukulele and create a song about it. And some of the gems found out that it was going away, and so they bought up a bunch of them for him so he could enjoy them before they went away. Steven is a kid, and the gems do their best to protect, not just because of who his mother was, but because of who Steven is and how sweet sweet he is, because he is just a sweet, innocent kid who does want to do well in the world. So that's kind of like the basis. Now, his dad, basically not a deadbeat dad, but definitely trifling. So his dad
is neglectful, but no, not in a mean neglectful, but like a I'm not always involved, but I'm around he's not kind always, of guy.
Exactly. He's not mean neglectful. He basically runs the car wash downtown in their city. And whenever Steven needs him, he will show up. But he's not, like, the best, most reliable dad. And he's not the kind of person where you're like, oh, I totally get what Rose saw on him. Like, you don't exactly know. And even the gems are like, your dad's not the most reliable guy on the planet when he has a problem. And he's like, well, maybe we can ask my dad for help. And the gems are kind of like, eh. Maybe not Steven. So there are three gems currently that are in the series. You've got Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl. And they each have their own personalities. Basically, they're like Powerpuff Girls, but on a combination of drugs. So Pearl is very much trying to be a pearl of wisdom about cautiously finding the best solutions and raising awareness for everyone, and is super caretakery and often moves even when she's in battle with moves like ballet dancer.
Okay.
Garnet is basically the tank of the group. So she doesn't say a lot of words, but when she does, they matter. And you can't really read her emotions because she's always very stoic faced and wears glasses, so you can't see her eyes. But she also terribly believes in Steven and is very supportive in her own way. And then you have Amethyst, who Amethyst loves fighting and brawling. And she's, you know, a little short and stocky. She's definitely the type to get grimy. She enjoys hanging out with Steven and going to eat food and wrestling and all that kind of stuff. She too loves Steven, but she's definitely the aggressor of the group. Oh, and by the way, pretty sure she's voiced by Cree Summer, so that just makes me love the character even more.
Oh, isn't that the lady who was Susie from Rugrats and number Correct. Two in Codename Kids Next Door?
Correct.
I thought I heard Estelle was in that too.
It's possible. I haven't checked out all the voice actors, but I wouldn't doubt it. And Steven also has a love interest. There's a girl, Connie, who's also quite nerdy, that lives in their city, who he's got a massive crush on and is always trying to impress. But it's very interestingly drawn, and the stories are, again, they very much remind me of Powerpuff Girls setups, in that there's always some ne'er-do-well coming from someplace, and there's an obstacle that has to be overcome, and it is overcome by teamwork, by Steven paying attention, and everybody playing their part for...
Have you ever seen Gravity Falls?
No, I haven't.
Because, I was looking at some screenshots since you have brought this up, and it looks like if I had to try to pinpoint the animation style, I'd say it's a mix of Gravity Falls plus Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, there's definitely a Pilgrim vibe.
If I had to try to pinpoint it, it's a fusion of those two, it looks like.
It's really very well done, and the setup with losing his mom and having a dad that's not really involved is definitely something that is very adultish for the cartoon and the way that they approach that, because Steven lives with the gems. He doesn't live with his dad. It's very interesting, and it's sweet and fun, while there's this very serious undertone underneath, because Steven has never gotten to know his mom and only knows of his mom through the gems. So it is extremely, extremely interesting. And the fan art that I've seen online all focuses on the relationships between the gems and Steven. And they go to some very deep, and a few of them to some very dark places, and come out the other end pretty well. So I'm not exactly sure what it is about it exactly. I just think it's the perfect meld of the perfect things that everyone has a fandom about. You know, I see a lot of Powerpuff Girls in it. I see a big chunk of some of the underlying family stories from Disney movies, like Ohana meaning family, and family being made up of many different things, not just who you're blood related to. You know, so there's a lot in there that I think mixed together and created a series that a lot of people relate to for a lot of reasons. Very much like My Little Pony. I think that that's kind of the surprise grab for the older adults. So I will finish watching all of it. But if you haven't checked out Steven Universe, you absolutely should.
Okay.
And Panda, I think you would love it.
I've seen some, like, lightly, like, through flipping through channels, but I've never, like, sat through an episode. But from what I've seen, it looked pretty cool. But I was a little worried that it was going to err on the side of the breadwinners, which is really stupid, and Clarence, which is also really stupid. I've watched Rick and Morty. I actually feel slightly stupid for not catching a lot of the references in that as quickly as you would anticipate someone who's, you know, of this generation too. I definitely do think Rick and Morty is a little above the kid level in a lot of the things that they are. Like, it's definitely not a cartoon for kids. Mm-hmm. It's more of a cartoon for, like, older teenagers to young 20-somethings.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the jokes do nail right on the head. Like, I can't help but roll over and laugh. And I mean, I can't tell if it's, I think it's Chris Parnell's the dad in that. He does very well. I haven't been able to pinpoint other voices just yet. It has some funny accents. I can't say if the whole series as a whole is funny, but you have to be in the right mood to watch Rick and Morty. Because like I said, right. a lot is going on. But I will take a gander at both those two things you've talked about because they both seem to be right up my alley. But are you done there, bro?
I am. That's what I've been watching and stuff like that. The only other thing that I had to add that would be somewhat game related was that 3A Toys is creating a new Titan figure, Titan from the game Destiny.
Oh, Destiny conversation. Okay.
It has 24 points of articulation. It comes with a couple of weapons, so you can swap out the hands and it can hold different weapons, so you can pose it in different ways.
Does it come with a Galahorn?
No. No, nothing comes with a Galahorn. You cannot has Galahorn.
Is it Hawk Moon?
That's basically that Destiny. Only a chosen few get the Galahorn. That's really what it should be titled. In year two, everybody will get a Galahorn because they're going to nerf it. And they'll make a new gun that's like it that you can never get. But this Titan looks amazing. It very much reminds me of quality-wise from the shots that I've seen of the Hot Toy type figures. It is $190.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's that. It's not a toy.
Oh.
You will not be getting it for your child.
I don't have no kids, so that's
you
fine.
Might be getting it for the child inside you.
I ain't got the money for that, so nope.
This is not a plaything. This is a display thing. It is absolutely, absolutely stunning. And Bambalam is doing a exclusive version of it that comes with an extra gun. I gotta tell you guys, this thing, every time I look at it, it hurts my soul. By the way, one of the weapons that it does come with is a Hawk Moon, Panda.
Oh my god, get out!
No, it does come with a Hawk Moon. Yeah. So
nice touch. Touch.
It is a very nice touch. If you get the Bambalan one, it comes with Shadow Price Assault Rifle, the Fell Winter's Lie Shotgun, the Zombie Apocalypse Machine Gun, and the Hawk Moon Hand Cannon. So,
got it.
That. It's beautiful. And I will not own it, but if anybody out there has, like, extra money in their pocket and they just want to give it to me, I mean, I'll take it.
I know you would.
Like, I can do like 150, but because don't get me wrong, I love the Titan class too.
But your first was a hunter, so I'm sure you have a special warm
hunters
place.
Do have a special place in my heart, followed by the Titan, and then my warlock, because my warlock can't jump for shit.
I still don't understand why you can't jump.
Well, it's got to be something about the class, because I played that same mission with a friend of mine, and I was a Titan, and they were a warlock, and they couldn't make the jump either.
But I could do it.
Yeah, so maybe it's something about the combination of gear that we have and whatever race we were, because I think she's the same race as my warlock.
Well, but we're awoken.
But she couldn't make the jump either at the same point.
That is weird, because I could do it.
Yep, and she was a level 30. So she's like, she sent me a message. She's like, I can't make the jump. I'm like, don't worry, I can solo it. I got it from this point.
Thank you.
So that's all I have. I am now done with my stuff. What is your stuff, sisses?
Well, I mean, I've got like this weird amalgamation of things. So I don't have one particular topic. I'm going to bounce around because that's just the way that my brain works.
Well, then bounce, baby.
Since we ended more on an anime tip, let me continue with that a little bit.
Yeah, anime.
I love Crunchyroll.
Yeah, Crunchyroll's
that's
good
just
shit.
Kind of a base in my life these days.
Uh-huh.
And I do like to bounce between the anime series and the drama series that they showcase. which primarily are like K-dramas and J-dramas and stuff like that. But I often tend to watch a lot of K-dramas. But there was a J-drama that I watched pretty much marathon through the whole thing, kind of with my head cocked to the side, because I had a hard time kind of figuring out what was going on. It was called Bishonen Boys Celebrity. So it obviously has hot boys in it, apparently. Moe-type hot boys. And they are considered like the top six boys that create beautiful things. And they pretty much live, because you never see them outside of this salon, in this salon called Celebrity. The thing about this mystical salon is that you cannot just go there and get an appointment. You have to be invited there. Throughout the course of the episode, their mission is to make whoever comes through that door the most beautiful woman, because that's where they're gearing it towards, in the world. And at first I'm like, okay, so we're just going to see makeovers of all these already not very ugly women. But the catch of the series is that at the salon, it's not just about making someone physically beautiful, it's about making their insides match their outsides. So all these women who are coming have this internal emotional problem, or this handicap, something that is keeping their true inner beauty from coming out. Each of the boys has a specialty. So there are three concierges. You've got Go, who's kind of like the rude gangster who, like, left Japan to go to New York and, like, learned how to do hair and mastered his technique by age 12. He's kind of in your face and abrasive, but clearly has talent. Then you have Rio, who's got glasses and he's very calculating, and he has this calculation equation technique that will calculate the best beauty for your type of, like, it's all computer and sci-fi and stuff like that. And then there is Kay, who is kind of new and literally was, like, on a farm somewhere. They don't really delve into his story a lot, but apparently he's, like, a natural, and like the other two concierges are giving him a hard time because he's been kind of in a rut lately. And then they have a second team that does makeup, nails, and like clothes. It was nice and refreshing. There was this weird backstory with the owner who was never there, who was sitting here trying to not only help these boys make other people beautiful, but obviously help them with their own personal issues that could be hindering them from doing their jobs. I think this would probably translate better if it had been an anime over a drama.
Okay.
Because a lot of the things that they're doing to try to, there was a lot of stylistic choices about how they would use their techniques that I think would be easier to translate if they had had the ability to animate it as opposed to live and practical props and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot of the times, like in Food Wars, where like, you know, they're chopping really fast and they're throwing ingredients in the air and it's all slow motion, like you kind of fall into that magic. And in this series, when they're doing hair, like all of a sudden these fans would come out of nowhere because you never saw them, but all of a sudden these girls' hairs would just kind of fly, and like they would like, and then they would fake use the scissors around their hair, because I'm like, there's no way these actresses would let these boys who are probably not actually trained to like snip their hair. Think Edward Scissorhands, but like Japanese, and five of them.
And yeah, it definitely sounds like something that probably should have been an animated series.
It should have been.
Or was it in fact inspired by an anime series?
Well, it was a light drama. It was like a light story. There are things that can be left to your imagination, but I feel like with all the things that they were attempting to do with practical effects, just it kind of slightly felt short. And like I would start to get into it and then I wouldn't. Not to mention, if you have an ability called the sleeping lamb and a man is literally just shampooing your hair until you fall asleep, doesn't really constitute as an ability to me.
I mean, that's an ability that I'd be okay with my man having.
Like, he's just like, oh, Kay's using the sleeping lamb. He's going to make her. And like, as he's scrubbing her hair, like, she starts recalling memories and like a tear falls from her eye. And like, he takes her tear and then he rubs it in the shampoo. And like, it's a little out there. One of the guys, like, he cuts hair with his mind's eye, so his eyes are shut while he's cutting your hair. I'm like, oh, fuck no.
No.
Fuck no.
No.
No. But if you're looking for something a little out there and different, and, I mean, it was still a very cute show, and there's only 13 episodes total, all of them ranging in 30 minutes, so they're not long. Like, most traditional K and J dramas will be like an hour plus, but these are really short and kind of to the point that I'm still trying to figure out
what that is,
what it really is. But that's out there. Then there's this anime series that I caught on Crunchyroll. Currently right now there are only 4 episodes in rotation, and it's called Makoto no Danshi, which roughly translates to Pillow Boys.
Oh, yeah, that one.
And, like, I had seen some people on my Facebook talking about it, and, like, every time I go on Crunchyroll, it's, like, the first thing, like, recommended for me. And I'm like, I don't know why this is recommended. My life's good. Like, and at first I'm like, oh, cute boys. Like, they didn't say anything else about it except, don't you want, like, hot boys whispering sweet nothings into your ear? And I'm like, hey, every once in a while, I wouldn't mind that. Let me see what's going on. And it's a short form series episode. They range in about 4 minutes. And I sat there kind of stumped because each episode showcases a different moe archetype of a man. So in the first one, you have this very young, needy kind of boy man who's like pretty much laying on a katsu and like hugging a pillow, and he's like, yeah, let's just go to sleep, you look really tired and I've been lonely all day. And I'm like, were you at your job? Like, I kept hearing myself talking back, and I'm like, it's like, get a life, go outside, read a book, like, don't. And at the end of that, I felt like I didn't understand what the purpose of that is. I'm like, should I watch this when I'm, like, about to fall asleep? Am I having problems sleeping? And then it hit me that that's exactly what the demographic they're trying to hit was. So I was like, all right, well, that's not my type. So let me see episode number 2. And it was a total older senpai from the office type deal. And, I mean, I work primarily with women, so this scenario totally didn't work for me. And it's like, you drank too much. Granted, that's definitely something that could happen in my real life. But I've only ever passed out in a cab. I've never, like, almost fallen asleep in a cab because I don't trust cabs, generally.
Or buses.
Or trains.
You're not actually really pro mass transit.
I'm really not. But I could kind of see how some people, and animes that I watch, like, I find myself, like, if there's an older senpai kind of character, I'm like, okay, I can understand the dynamic. This also wasn't for me. The third one was this musician guy who, like, played violin, blonde hair, seemed kind of in that tsundere kind of archetype, like, seemed really hard on the outside, but at some point a spider drops down while he's performing for you. Granted, he's holding a violin and he's like, listen to my sweet songs, and then he puts the bow to it and you hear nothing. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You can't even put a lullaby on in the background? Like, you can't make me believe the scenario? But, like, a spider drops down and he, like, freaks out and goes hiding under a chair, and I'm like, oh my god. I'm like, this is still not my, like, none of it did it for me. And I'm like, maybe it's because I'm actualized and I'm pretty happy with my real life pillow boy. Was not really a pillow. And but I've never understood Japanese love pillows. I know a couple of friends in real life who have them, and, like, I mean, I'm a fan of body pillows, probably a little too much, which is why Eshmom kept throwing them away after a while. There are going to be 12 episodes total, so they're about a third of the way through. There are, and I'll probably touch back on this once this episode airs, but there are twins in it, and I happen to be a fan of the twin moe.
No. It's got twins?
So, after I see that episode, if that one doesn't win me over knowing that I'm partial to that, then I'll know that this is not legit. But, hey, if you're a lonely person out there, because I know they're aiming this towards women, it really shouldn't be. It should just be aimed at people who are lonely at night and want some creature comfort and, like, you know,
as long as that comfort comes from a boy.
I mean, if they prefer the attention of a male, yeah. You don't even need a full body pillow for the experience, just like a nice sturdy one. I'm not gonna get into that though. But anyway, that is out there for you if you need it.
Wow.
But not least,
just yeah. Wow.
Nostalgia. And I'm trying not to go there.
Yeah, but you are.
Last but certainly not least. This is more of a more or less confirmed rumor, which sounds like an oxymoron, and it kind of sort of is, but hear me out.
I don't really have a choice for doing a podcast.
I know.
With your confirmed rumor.
It's an oxymoron, though. But it sounds like Final Fantasy XII is getting a remake. Now, let me rewind here. I play Final Fantasy. I came in a little late, though, and started with 10. Then I went back and played 7 and 8. I couldn't finish 9. Then I went to 12 because 11 was online. I did not do a Realm Reborn, and you already should know my history with the 13s. So, with that in mind.
Do you know how you feel about them 13s, though?
And I'm not even going to get into it, but you guys should know. And if you haven't, go back about 200 episodes, and I'm sure I'm talking about it. But anyway, Final Fantasy XII was probably the last decent Final Fantasy game to come out before the mistake of the 13s. It was fresh. I liked the story. It seemed kind of heady, but I was also playing Lost Odyssey at the same time as I was playing Final Fantasy XII, or like pretty much close to each other, because Lost Odyssey was fucking long.
Mm-hmm.
As all
I remember watching you play that game.
Oh, God. And I still love it, and I still haven't even finished it yet, because I'm going to have all those...
What was the lead character's game in that? Kane?
Kane. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and every time he would speak, I would get sleepy.
He had let me lull you to sleep voice.
Yes.
He did. But anyway, but Final Fantasy XII was really, really good. I loved it revitalized the sphere grid, which is your skill tree, essentially. 12 really initiated the sphere grid system first. But 12 really kind of honed in on that and made it even better by allowing you to rebuy your spheres and to actually have different characters be able to, like, take on abilities that they would not necessarily, given their type, which was really nice. So, like, if you were having a problem with a battle, you could respect everybody, like, right before the battle, and it not one cost you your entire game. Like, you could kind of drop in, drop out, try this, try that. And it was a fresh way of doing it for 12. Because then 13 came out with its Crystalis system, which could suck a dick. At a Final Fantasy Distant Worlds concert in Pittsburgh, one of the composers, Arnie Roth, has stated that there was a Final Fantasy XII remake underway, which should be coming out soon. People are kind of thinking he might have meant the HD remaster, which we've already kind of heard about, but
right.
I don't know if it sounds more like a full remake of Final Fantasy, if he's mistaking 7 for 12, but there's really kind of no reason, rhyme or reason for that stipulation. So a lot of people are kind of sitting on, you know, their hands because they're not exactly sure. Square Enix hasn't made any official announcements about it. We did already get the enhanced versions of 10 and 10.2 for the PlayStation systems, which I bought for my PlayStation 3, which I kind of wish I had gotten for my 4. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make mistakes. It's fine.
Yep.
Not to mention, even after I bought it for the 3, I didn't even get to see more before I was like, bored, and stopped. Which is kind of sad because I love Final Fantasy X. So I've just become very impatient about my games, which shouldn't be that much of a surprise. However, it seems like Square has realized where it could be focusing its attention. So if we do get a full finalized, no longer a rumor, actually confirmed one, that would be amazing because of all games to get a reboot. I know we're getting 7 finally.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see the better games getting their chance to make their debuts on current consoles. So just keep your eyes and ears out, because you know certainly I am. I could talk briefly about another series I was watching on Crunchyroll, but I feel like that's something. It's called Rebound, and literally it's about a woman named Oba who is the daughter of a inn, like a diner, and her father makes the best pork chop cutlets ever. Like, people come from all over to eat these. Like, they're just that good. And when we first meet her, she's really, really young. And she's kind of fat because she eats really delicious pork all day. And
I mean, delicious pork is a good thing.
I mean, like, he makes, like, Don, but he does it with, like,
with like a pork cutlet instead of like beef or something else. Like they're bowls, but people come for the pork. And she's and she's young, and one day she gets lost when they're in Tokyo, and she finds herself at this pastry shop. This older man, because she's a little kid, she's probably like 4 or 5, which makes me wonder why her parents would let her just kind of walk around at that age. But, you know, what do I know? But the chef, the pastry chef, was like, oh, let me give you this cake. It's going to make you happy. And he gives her a shortcake. And the minute she begins to eat it, these big, massive, like, church bells go ringing off in her head. And from that point on, all she ever does is eat her dad's pork and pastries. Like, she's a pastry addict. And she goes and blows up. Like, she's huge. I want to say she hits, like, about, like, 210 pounds. And, you know, especially over there, that is massively,
massive. That is a very
big number.
Large amount of weight to put on.
It is. And that is progressively through her life. So it's not like she goes from, like, 4-year-old to, like, 200 pounds at age 10. Like, but she's big. But she decides in her little mind that she is going to marry a pastry chef when she gets older. And, like, she's ready to, like, to accept her body the way that it is because, you know, in order to be a pastry chef's wife, you're going to have to eat everything he makes and, like, be ready for that consequence. And she ends up going to Tokyo as an adult, and she gets a job at this great magazine. They're like, oh, well, before you get here, you need to lose weight because we don't accept fatties in the fashion world, is essentially what they say to her. And she goes to this clinic, which I don't know if these are things that are actually there or not, but there are, like, workout sabbatical clinics where, like, you pay a chunk of money to, like, live there and, like, eat nothing and, like, run on treadmills and, like, have surgeries and, like, slim down. She goes to this place and pretty much uses all of her savings to pay for this process that will let her slim herself down to 99 pounds in, like, 2 weeks' time. Like, it's scary how fast she slims down. And she gets this job, and she's a copy editor, and everyone kind of thinks she's too happy all the time, and she is really kind of positive to that point where you're like, God, you're really annoying. I wish you would shut up. You know people like that, because I know I do. And she is tasked to go to this pastry shop to interview the owner because there's, like, lines down the street. And she's like, I really can't go there. I really can't eat that stuff. I kind of had a problem. And, like, well, if you want this job, it can't be a problem anymore. So she goes, and she meets this guy there who looks just like the man that she met when she was, like, 5. And she's like, oh, she's like, you look so familiar from my memories. And, you know, I was here once when I was really little. And the guy, his name's Tachi, he's like, you must have come to my late dad's pastry shop. But this is mine now, and this is what we do here. And she's like, do you still have all those cakes from back then? And, you know, he's like, well, I'm trying out some new stuff. And, like, he puts this whole plate in front of her. And, like, she's taking little nibbles here and there, trying to be cautious of the fact that, you know, she has spent a lot of money to be 100 pounds. And she has to be careful because she is addicted to sweets. So if she starts really seriously eating them, she will balloon back up, which is the whole process of the whole rebound title. Because constantly throughout the series, she's either back to her huge weight or somehow slimming back down. And that's kind of playing into the tumultuous aspects that are going on in her life with her job and her romance and her family and her friends. And it's really an interesting thing because you never know at the start of the episode where she is on that spectrum until you start watching it. They are extremely long. Like, they are about an hour and a half. One was literally almost 2 hours. I think it's because it was the arc end into the next arc of it. But it's funny. It's light on humor. I mean, there's a lot of serious notes that are going on that would make it very relatable to anyone who's been on one side of that spectrum or another. I know I have, so it did kind of register on a personal place for me. But that's also available on Crunchyroll. It is, I think it's in one of the, it's pretty much recommended to everybody just because I think the comedy is just spot on. So if you're looking for something to show you food porn because Food Wars doesn't update fast enough for you, this series will definitely do it for you in a heartbeat because the cakes this guy makes
I'm like, oh God, I'm just gaining weight looking at them, and I'm not even eating them. That's what I got.
Well, there you have it. I don't know that that's necessarily something that I would watch, but...
Oh, but you watch Food Wars, though.
Yeah, the only reason why is I'm very, very particular about my K-dramas and J-dramas, and I tend to enjoy the ones that are basically about really, really powerful families dicking each other over.
Those are pretty good.
Yeah, you know, if I'm gonna plunk down for a marathon at an hour and some a chunk, I want some real salacious shit. Not things that are just going to make me want to put it on pause and order delivery.
I want my mom to make me want to marry somebody else, even though she knows I like this poor motherfucker over here. Then I want her to drug him and, like, force me to marry this guy or she's going to kill him. Like, it was so good. Some of those are really, like, top notch. Mwah!
Yeah.
But okay.
Yeah. Lipstick? Oh, my God. But we'll talk about
that. I have not seen that one.
No. Yep. All right. I'm shushing now, but you need to watch it. So there's that. But it does sound interesting. Like, if you were watching it, I would watch it with you.
It is cute, and it is fun. It is absolutely fun.
Well, there you have it. All kinds of entertainment talk. Game stuff, anime stuff, hell, even K-drama and J-drama. Well, actually, mostly just J-drama stuff on the show today. So if you like what you hear, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or in iTunes, either on the desktop application or on the podcast app on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. Our show is also available on Stitcher Radio, and you can find us pretty much in any podcast search engine on the planet. So make sure that you find us, you subscribe to us, and that way you can get our brand new episodes every week when we put them out. Make sure that you're also checking out the other shows from our network, because we have a great, great group of people creating some really kick-ass content. So if you like entertainment stuff and live la vida indie, whether that's music, movies, TV, theater, whatever, then make sure you check out No Borders, No Race, hosted by our homeboy KBD, King Baby Duck, over at b3crew.com. You can also check out Geek Aggro and find great mixes of deep house, trance, and pretty much everything in EDM that you need to be listening to over at geekaggro.com. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues.
Y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program, you can call in. Right now, he's focusing on recaps, taking a little bit of a break, but we'll be back soon, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to you about recap this, recap that, when that happens. And of course, new to the fam, but not new to the game, The Structure Network, over at thestructurenetwork.com. They've got all kinds of great content over there, live streams, Twitch streams, unboxing, games, comics, wrestling, you name it, The Structure Network is covering it. The grid is live, people. Make sure that you follow them on Facebook and on Twitter and check out their page. I'm telling you, great, great stuff from the team over there, including stuff from Proven Gamer, Fat Guy Movie Critic. Like, it's ridiculous, all the stuff that's popping up over there. So make sure that you check it out. And with that, it's the time of the show where I turn to my sister and say, "Hey, yo, sis."
Yes?
What shit you digging this week?
Hydration.
Yeah, hydration. Hydration is, like, legit.
That and, like, ibuprofen.
Because the thirst was real. The thirst. And now the hangover is.
What shit are you digging this week, bro?
There's a lot of shit that I'm digging this week, but the one that I really gotta throw up is our homeboy, Godfrey, over at Gamertag Radio, got inducted to the Podcast Academy Hall of Fame last week.
Yay!
So big up to Danny and the whole crew over at Gamertag. I mean, they're idols, they're homies, and Danny dedicated his award to Krista Carter, who is suffering and fighting the hell out of cancer and kicking its ass. So that's the shit I'm digging. Fucking community, man. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Bye.